At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. Hi there, Bill.
Hello, Howard. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Now, some Britons are still moving to Europe despite Brexit. It's been a dream for so many Britons, whether to work here or maybe to enjoy their retirement years. But do you think this trend will continue after Brexit?
Well, I might ask the question, will the weather change in the United Kingdom? Because so long as the Northern Hemisphere tends to get to more inclement weather, the more likely we are to see people continuing, I think, to move to the Mediterranean areas. And there's some evidence that, frankly, there is a very swift and rapid movement of people at the moment trying to make the move they've probably been contemplating for a long time before Brexit comes to an end. But, you know, and just to repeat something we've said earlier, Howard, in these broadcasts, you and I have been broadcasting a long time before the freedom of movement and all the rest of it took place. And you know as well as I do that it wasn't very difficult to go down and pick up your, your residence card or whatever it was you wanted to be a resident of the country in which you've chosen to live. And the simple fact is, if it were to go somewhat hard in the final analysis of Brexit, they're not going to stop any of the southern Mediterranean countries, Britons, immigrating into their countries. They bring enormous economic benefit and wealth, phenomenal spending. And you know, when you consider that the value of that to the European economies, I mean, we do also have a lot of people who come from the continental European members of the European Union and who take up residence in the United Kingdom. And whilst there's somewhat of an imbalance, more Brits, if you like, in continental Europe than continental Europeans in Britain, nonetheless, there's every sense in coming to an agreement on this. And you can see in the last week or so, a couple of weeks at the outside, the tenor, in my opinion, of the negotiations between the EU and the United Kingdom, in particular coming from the current president, that he's beginning to temper the rather more aggressive stance that he had earlier on in the year, when he said that, you know, Britain would probably suffer from a hard Brexit. And now he's saying that, you know, he can't really see a deal not being done. And I think that will include a very simple method by which individuals can continue to work in countries around Europe and enjoy their retirement years living in Europe.
Well, you say that's going to happen, Bill, that residency is going to be recognised for those who've moved. But what about those who've not yet moved? Do you think it will be still easy for them to live in Europe?
Yeah, I do, Howard. I think there will be a simple methodology by which that has to happen. No one in continental Europe would want, that's outside of the United Kingdom, would want to prevent the economic benefit that arrives from allowing people to come and live in their country, provided they register for all the, social security costs and taxation that is payable, if that's where you're going. But the simple truth of the matter is, why hasn't it been agreed yet? I think it's because, you know, the EU has to some extent been hardballing it about the financial penalty that the United Kingdom has to pay in departing the European Union. We are in the very early stages of some very, very difficult negotiations. And I think that whether it's a soft or a hard Brexit, there will be no reason to suspect that UK individuals will not be permitted to live and work and retire in European countries, provided they register, perhaps as they used to 20 years ago, and get a work permit and get a residence permit, and then life goes on as normal. The only big difference is because they've been guaranteed free movement over the last 20 years or so. But going back beyond that, it wasn't terribly difficult to get a residence permit nor a work permit, provided you came to the country with a view to staying there and investing in property and, you know, paying your taxes accordingly.
Yeah, of course. So what about those who've already retired and are living in the EU? Have many British expatriates decided to return to the UK because of Brexit? And I understand there's been a lot of concern over the UK state pension payments.
Yeah, there has been some fear. There's been fears that, you know, millions of expats who live in Europe would see their pensions frozen, meaning that their value would steadily erode over time. That is the situation in countries such as Canada and Australia. And despite these places being Commonwealth territories, British state pension payments to British expatriates living in those countries are not increased each year in line with inflation. And a few years ago, there was a major campaign headed by a South African individual whose pension had not increased for 25 years since he retired there. And of course, his pension still remains at the rate of pension he was earning 25 years ago. But an update, just in the second week of September, published very quietly, and that confirmed that the British government does intend to continue increasing UK state pensions to expatriates living within the European Union after the UK leaves the European Union in 2019. And it showed also, I have to say, that Britain and the EU both took the same position on annual increases, that they would each, the EU and Britain, continue to make the increases for their nationals after Brexit was over. And so, you know, there is already in this type of agreement being published very quietly. I don't really quite understand why this was sneaked out, as it were, quietly. But it gives a lot of confidence to people already retired in continental Europe, Britons. And it also gives British people who are contemplating going absolute certainty that in the future their pension will be subject to the normal increases that take place if they had stayed in the UK.
That's very interesting, Bill. Very interesting, especially for our listeners, of course.
Sure.
And looking at our listeners in Spain, what advice do you have for people who want to move to Spain but are put off by the tax implications?
Yeah, I think it's an understandable pressure. When you've made a decision that you wish to reside in Spain for the long term, and then down the bottom of your shopping list is, well, how is the tax going to be on my wealth and my income when I live in Spain? Well, without wishing to go into a very complex argument, there is no doubt that within the environment of Spain, the tax planning environment, there are substantially more opportunities to reduce tax than exist in the United Kingdom. You can, for example, instead of buying one of these exempt savings plans that the UK government have blessed, you can put unlimited amounts of money into a very similar vehicle within Spain, an insurance bond, if you like, where the roll-up of income and gains can go on and on in perpetuity virtually without any tax being paid at all. And when you take an income from it, that income is highly favoured compared to other sources of income. There are, as long as you take proper advice at the right time and don't rush into something and take decisions without proper advice, then you are likely to find yourself much better off from a tax perspective in Spain than you could ever be if you remained in the UK. So there isn't really any reason at a taxation level for anyone to consider putting off their retirement or their working life in Spain simply because they don't understand the benefit of tax planning in Spain.
Yeah. But what about those who know they want to leave the UK, but perhaps haven't decided on which country yet? Do you recommend they compare taxation in different countries to help them to choose where to move to?
Well, you know, if you're obsessed by tax, the answer would be yes, of course. But if you're really looking for a better quality of life, if you're looking for a lifestyle that you would like to take up, and you found that is in Spain, as hundreds of thousands of British people have, then I think you have to look at taxation as a secondary issue. I mean, don't let the tax tail wag the life dog. You know, you don't want to persuade yourself not to go to a place that you feel is where you would like to spend the rest of your life simply because the taxation situation looks difficult. That has happened. I have met lots of people in the last few years who have decided, having looked at the changing face of taxation in Spain, remember how I mean, 20 years ago, cash transactions were the normal way of things. That is fast disappearing, even though it still exists in many areas, it's fast disappearing with a common reporting standard, automatic exchange of information. And the simple truth is that right now, we have a situation where if you go to Spain and you take proper advice, then of course you can end up with very low levels of taxation compared to most of the other European countries. So don't allow your lack of understanding of taxation to put you off. I mean, you need to know what you don't know, and that perhaps covers Spanish taxation, and then you need to know someone who does know. And that's why businesses like Blevins Franks exist, to make sure that if you're uncertain in any particular area, you get a definitive answer which gives you the encouragement and positive information that you need to make a reasoned decision.
Yeah. What other taxation tips can you give to our listeners who are still at the planning stages of leaving the UK?
Well, I wouldn't want to give any precise tips, if you like, because I think tax planning is always a question of a tailor-made solution. There isn't really one size fits all. But the one thing I would encourage listeners to do is to always take advice at the earliest possible moment if you are planning to relocate outside of the UK. There are lots of huge tax and other financial benefits that you can acquire if you get your strategy in planning to leave the UK absolutely right. There are capital gains, there can be capital gains tax advantages, there can be substantial income tax advantages if you position yourself before you leave the UK to leave the UK under terms where the UK takes less tax from you on departure than might otherwise have been the case. It's also important, having just talked about the lack of understanding in depth, if you like, of Spanish taxation, that businesses, I don't know of any others, but Blevins Franks in particular, are specialists in making sure that if you jump out of the UK tax frying pan, you don't jump into the Spanish fire. They will make sure that your affairs are properly positioned before you arrive in Spain to ensure that you hit the ground running without any concern about unnecessary taxation.
Yeah. And what about estate planning, Bill? Should people study succession laws before moving to a new country?
I think if you start studying that, you probably will be in a coma after 5 minutes. It is a hugely turgid piece of legislation. Let me just perhaps warn listeners that succession tax in Spain is different to succession laws. That is not the case in the UK. There is inheritance tax and that's it. And you can pretty much leave your money to whomsoever you wish. Under Spanish succession law, there is a statutory right of inheritance for your children and for other people, and you don't always get the right to leave money to whomsoever you choose. There is a statutory definition called succession law, and succession law has to be imposed upon your estate before succession tax is calculated, and the tax is payable in a different form in continental Europe, in Spain in particular, than it is in the UK. And because there is no double tax treaty that covers succession and inheritance tax, you are technically, if you are still a domicile of the UK, and you might still remain a domicile for the rest of your life, even though you live in Spain, and you are also a resident of Spain, you can be liable for succession tax and inheritance tax on the same assets. And then you get into a very complicated argument about who pays what to whom, and that will take, in many cases, up to a couple of years to sort out. And that's the last thing you need. Once again, it really is about knowing what you don't know, and then finding somebody who can tell you what you've got to do, because they do know.
Yeah. Now, on the Costa Blanca, Bill, I believe there's a seminar coming up next month. Have you got the details on that?
Yeah, as you know, Blevins Franks has been running these seminars for in excess of 35 years, spring and autumn time. The Blevins Franks Benny Yofar's office is holding a seminar in Torrevieja on Tuesday, the 10th of October. We've entitled it The Global Investment Market Outlook in the Light of Brexit and Trump. So much of this will be covered again, the stuff we've been talking about today. We've got a guest speaker, the eminent Dr. Stephen Wood, who is the chief market strategist for North America for Russell Investments. And he's going to discuss the concerns of Brexit and global uncertainty and trying to put them, if you like, Howard, into perspective and making calm sense of the noise that surrounds both of them. I mean, Stephen Wood is an enormously engaging and somewhat entertaining public speaker. You won't regret attending. If you want to go along and understand what the view of Russell and Blevins Franks is on these issues, then you can reserve your place by calling 965-705-502. That's 965-705-502, or you can go to the website at blevinsfranks.com, and all of the information and the opportunity to reserve your place is there on the website.
Excellent, Bill, and that date again for listeners who missed it, Tuesday the 10th of October.
Tuesday the 10th of October, yep, the day after my birthday.
We'll talk, there we go, congratulations in advance. We'll talk again at the same time next week.
I'm trying to forget them now, Howard. Johnny, have a good week, Howard, bye-bye.
And you.
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contract. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.